Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, our mild-mannered podcasters were bombarded by gamma rays, bitten by radioactive bugs, mutated by toxic waste, irradiated with cosmic rays, born into a world that doesn't understand them.
First issue.
Greetings and salutations, everybody. This is episode number 329 of the Talking Comics Podcast.
Woo!
I am your host, Steve Say, and joining me this week on our delayed podcast is Mr. Bob Breyer.
Happy Pi Day!
Happy Pi Day indeed.
Yeah, there's another one coming later in the year.
Yes.
Gotta remember that there's the exceptional extra sort of estimated 22nd of July for those who do the cheat.
Indeed. And safe travels to Mr. Stephen Hawking, who has,
yes.
Who has left us and is very, very sad. We wish you safe journey, sir. Okay. So,
amen.
Here's the deal with this week's podcast. I'm going to break it down for you a little bit. It's Melissa's night, week off, so there's that. Jessica wanted to be here really bad, but then wound up in the world of puke with three people in her house throwing up, and now she is not feeling well, so that takes care of that. Joey's off suzicaling everywhere.
Yeah, is he Bartholomew Cubbins?
Yeah, he's doing, like... It's the whole thing. I see all kinds of things. He got some kind of lighting award. He'll have to tell us all about it
Wow.
when he gets back. Yeah, looks like he's having a lot of fun.
Nice.
So that's awesome. And Bronwyn. Bronwyn was going to join us this evening, and she was. She wrote so many notes. She read Motor Crush and Doom Patrol and had all kinds of things to say about it. And then she started to not feel so great. And now I am not starting to feel so great. So we are going to eke out a podcast for you this week, just Bob and I, because sometimes that's the roll of the dice, my friends. That's what you
get. Sometimes less is more.
Yes. And we love you and did not want you to go without a show. We always put out a show if it is within our power. And it wasn't up until about 10 minutes ago. So huzzah. Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed that we don't all... croak before the end of the program.
Indeed. You guys should take a shot every time I say that word this podcast, because it's probably going to be a lot. So
I'm okay. I'm in three.
Yeah, we still have lightning rounds. We still have I think we'll do one book for our round table discussion. We'll save the other one for another time. And we have
a mystery.
Yeah, we have some comic comic news announcements and
Lots of that actually.
Went on this past week. We were going to talk about DC Black Label, which I'll just say as a blanket statement, I'm very excited for.
Yeah, absolutely.
We want to wait until it's a bigger group to discuss all of that stuff. And I will also put out a blanket apology if the audio is off. It should be fine, but if it's not, just...
blame Skype.
Yeah, do what you got to do, because, we're experiencing some stuff with all this weather and all this craziness going on, and things are just not doing what they're meant to do.
Here on Long Island, we had our third nor'easter in 14 days.
What?
Yes, and there's another one for next Tuesday.
Mm.
Now, it seems weird that it's, you know, March and it's still doing this, but it is still winter for another week or so. So in this case, I don't know, in like a lion, out like a lion. I'm not sure what's going on, but
I don't know. Winter's too long. We got to have a meeting. We got to take care of this.
Yeah. Last week we had, 10 inches of snow. Yesterday, out in Riverhead, there was 18 inches of snow. And even here, 30 miles away, we still had about 7. And it was the worst kind of wet, heavy blech that if you moved one shovel full of it, you could feel your heart beating faster.
And you still have to go to work and all that.
Well, my company, yes, they don't close because they're in Kentucky and they don't seem to care. That last week it took me an hour to get home, what usually takes 10 minutes, and I nearly got stuck twice and T-boned once. Mm-hmm. That Jessica, I spoke to her, it took her 2.5 hours to get about 25 miles. Wow. In last week's rush hour. So, yeah, it's just a bit nuts. So yesterday it was snowing 2 inches an hour in the middle of morning rush hour. So we were going to open, and my manager, Angela, said, look, they're going to open. I can't hold it against you if you don't want to try this. It turns out by the middle of the afternoon, the sun was there, it was 40 degrees, and the roads were clear. But going in, according to the paper and our local news station, there were about 100 accidents on the expressway.
Oh, I believe it.
Just hideous, because there was no way to – at 2 inches an hour, there's no way to keep ahead of it unless you park 14 miles of dump trucks on the Long Island Expressway.
Nobody just cart wants the snow to do away. That. You know no. What I think would make you feel better about it, though, about all of it?
What's that?
A lightning round.
I think you're right.
Lightning round always – lightning round solves all your problems.
Yes, it does.
You should try it.
Do we have a sound effect for this, by the way?
Yeah, we totally do. I think I might have changed it since okay. Since last time, but let's see.
Wow.
Okay. I got him. We have it on silk, so maybe it'll be a pleasant sound.
Oh, okay.
At the end. Okay, Bob.
Okay, I was hoping for Zeus, but, you know, I'll go with silk.
I can fool around with it while you're doing your rounds. So okay. Sounds ridiculous. Okay. You have 5 minutes on the clock. Go.
Starting off, Giant Days by John Allison and Max Sarin has reached the girls' end of their second year at university and the 36th issue of this 6-issue miniseries. I'm so glad that my friendly colleagues got me started on this wonderfully funny yet real book, as I now count it as one of my all-time favorite reads. In this issue, Daisy Wooten has decided, with the help of Susan Tolomei and Esther DeGroote, that the time is right to break up with her love, Ingrid Desterly. The aftermath of this is portrayed brilliantly through some wonderfully done pages that show Daisy's recovery from her stages of grief, I guess is the best way to put it. It'll have you feeling, well, everything. While this is going on, Susan and Esther are getting ready for their summer, as well as next year when they'll be living apart.
Dun-dun-dun.
Yeah, Susan says, the household has been destroyed, but the friendship is stronger than ever. Daisy, yes, we tested it and it didn't explode. And Esther, I'm proud of all of us. And that last is exactly how I feel reading about these amazing young women. Oh, there's a cliffhanger epilogue that you can't miss. Next, I've got one book that deals with an alternate past and one with an alternate future. First, Bombshells United number 13 by Marguerite Bennett and Sandy Jarrell takes Alyssa and Felicity of Gotham's Batgirls all the way to Honolulu to solve the mystery of a pirate radio station broadcasting music so sweet that it's warped the minds of their friends Harper, Tim, and Betty. Their only hope of solving this mystery is the reclusive Black Canary. So it's a wonderful introduction of another Bombshell as we start this last sprint to the finish line, because Bombshells is coming to an end, folks. Cap 699, Mark Waid, Chris Samnee, Matthew Wilson still has Cap in the dystopian future of the far-flung 2025, where the elite hold sway thanks to the nuclear shenanigans of Rampart. King Babakin rules what's left of America, but Cap has a plan. But he has to get through Bruce Banner, once again the Hulk, to see it through. However, Cap's not alone, because he has discovered that the ever-loving blue-eyed thing is ready to lend a hand. Fabulous issue. And although the message is familiar, hearing Captain America espouse his mission statement is just stirring nonetheless. Two retro reviews. You Have Killed Me by Jamie S. Rich and Joel Jones from 2009 was just republished by Oni Press. It's a lovely melange of film noir's best, with hints of Raymond Chandler's The Big Sleep, mixed with a bit of the 1950 Rudolph Matey film DOA, remade a little bit later with Dennis Quaid, I guess it was. Randy Quaid is always dead on arrival. As with any great film noir,
I just got that.
Yeah, you have to get hooked by the opening. And here, I remember the smell of almonds. Natural oil, she said. I blocked the significance of that smell from my memory for years. You'd think I'd have noticed it. The smell, it used to just sting. Now it's going to hurt much worse, because now you have killed me. Mm-hmm. I'm getting ahead of myself. This story, just like any other, starts with a girl. Come on, that's just great stuff. The art is really sensational. You get to see, through our narrator, who is Private Detective Antonio Mercer. He just been hired by Jessica Roman to find her missing sister, Julie, who is also Antonio's ex-lover, and who's disappeared on the weekend of her wedding. Things escalate from there. The bodies start to pile up. Things get thornier. Great period piece from Mr. Rich and Ms. Jones. And in the artwork here, it's a little different than what you see in Lady Killer, but the threads are there. You can see the beginning and the formation of her just amazing art style. Hmm. Now, that book prompted me to reread what may be the first original graphic novel, 1950s It Rhymes with Lust, by Arnold Drake, who is the creator of the Doom Patrol, Leslie Waller, with art by the astounding Matt Baker. This picture novel was reprinted in a little facsimile edition by Dark Horse a couple of years back. And if you're interested in picking up the film noir detective pulpy kind of thing, or just a student of comic history, It Rhymes with Lust from Dark Horse Press. That's me.
Look at you, 17 seconds to go.
Ooh, I could have ranted a little bit more about Matt Baker, who was back in the day, back in the 1940s, Matt Baker was one of the few African-American artists working. And he is at some level with a couple of other folks, but is sort of the original good girl artist back with Albert Petty and George Petty, rather, and those folks back then. Pin-up-y art, but always tasteful and wonderfully drew just absolutely beautiful women. And his settings, his panel layouts, if he drew a car or a gun or a man's jacket, the folds and the fenders and the tires, everything was perfect. Baker was amazing. And an interesting little oddball thing, you know, one of those what-if things, I should pitch this at Jeff Schaefer one of these days for his, was it Forgotten History? What's his new podcast? I'm drawing a blank.
Changing History.
It's a great show. You should check it out. And just as Marvel was about to begin, they're doing all those monster sci-fi books. You know, Kirby and Ditko were doing Groot and the original version of Groot and all that sort of stuff. Some of Stan's artists from the 50s, a guy named Joe Manili, who did the original Black Knight, who was super, super fast, and Matt Baker were doing books for Stan as part of Atlas. Kirby comes back and really, you know, takes over with Ditko on Spider-Man, Kirby on literally everything else except maybe Iron Man, Don Heck. But that what if is Joe Manili falls off a subway train on the way home from a Christmas party and dies, and Baker goes into, I believe it was advertising work. What would Marvel's Silver Age history have been like? Joe Manili doesn't have one extra beer. Matt Baker hangs around. What would the Marvel books have looked like under Joe Manili? If you guys look up some Black Knight artwork by Manili, it's incredible stuff. And Matt Baker, also amazing. Would things would be very different without Kirby's energy and everything else? Would have even survived? Would it have started? Would a Joe Manili Fantastic Four have actually sold? I don't know. Jeff, I hope you're listening.
Have you seen the new suits, the new Fantastic Four suits yet?
Yes, I did. They remind me a lot of the Future Foundation after Johnny died. Right, a little bit white, blackish kind of thing. They still have the fours, but up on the shoulder now, right?
Right.
On a jacket. Yeah. That reminds me, one of our, we will talk later about things we're looking forward to.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel 2-in-1 is out this week.
It is. It is. There's a lot of good stuff out this week. Go ahead, Bob.
Oh, I was going to say, did you hear that Chip Zdarsky signed an exclusive with Marvel?
No.
Happened today.
Wait.
Yeah. Doesn't mean Doesn't mean he's giving up on sex criminals, but he signed an exclusive today.
See, that's the thing. I see other books coming out, like Kelly Thompson has something outside of Marvel that she's working on. I don't understand the exclusivity. I'm still a little blurry on that. Like, if you're exclusive, go ahead, Bob. Go ahead.
Well, you can be exclusive, but have exceptions.
Okay.
Now, in the case of some of these people who say, you know, well, Brian Michael Bendis is exclusive to DC now, they've let him bring stuff with him so he can do creator-owned. His deal is different.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure his paycheck is different on those per page or per script or so on. And others are allowed to have an exclusive deal where if you're working on major characters, you can't – if you're doing – let's say for the sake of it, Chip Zdarsky is going to do Fantastic Four for Marvel. He can't go do Batman or Starman or something at DC. But if he wants to do Sex Criminals, it could work. That's the way – again, it depends what's in a contract. You could get to do nothing except what you're assigned to. But I think from what C.B. Sobolski was saying in the article I read, he was so thrilled – and Chip was, of course, being Chip. I get to do anything I want with any character I feel like. They can't tell me anything.
And
CB kind of agreed, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, mostly. Mostly.
Do you think they're going to put him on Fantastic Four?
I sure hope so, because Marvel 2-in-1's been really, really good.
I wonder if it's been selling. I wonder if, like... Chip Zdarsky is now the hot ticket for Fantastic Four to come back.
Well, first issue sold very, very well. Second one had the usual downturn, but not ridiculous. It didn't go from 60 to 10.
Right.
Doing so well at it. Here's the thing. If who is their big writer right now? Donny Cates is booked up.
Yeah,
no
but...
pun intended.
Maybe that's not what they need. Maybe they need a Chip Zdarsky to bring back the Fantastic Four. Go with, like, I don't know, someone that, like, hangs with the kids or something like that. I don't know.
There are rumors about Hickman coming back.
Yeah, I would be down for more Fantastic Four. Absolutely.
Hickman. But failing that, I think Chip... Actually, in a way, right now... I think Chip Zdarsky is a better pick. I, as much as I love Jonathan Hickman's Fantastic Four, 3 years of interconnected, wonderful stories.
Yeah. But I would opt for Zdarsky. Absolutely.
Yeah, right. I want people to remember the fun of it, and let's build up. Let's do 18 months, 24 months of Zdarsky, and let Mr. Hickman fill up his whiteboard with ideas.
And come in
after.
Your microphone was freaking out for just a second.
Oh, ooh. How about now?
All right. Were you moving around?
Yes. I'm so excited.
Okay. Don't do that.
I won't do that.
All right. Awesome. The possibilities are endless. All right. Maybe we'll get an announcement in the next couple of days. Who knows?
I'm thinking San Diego at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if I'm going to that this year. I haven't really heard very much.
They didn't send you to New York.
No, they didn't.
Eh.
We're registered for San Diego. I just don't know what's up with it. I haven't heard much. I've been busy watching a lot of movies.
Here's something I just found out today. Do you know, you're going to be aggravated, there's a Brooklyn Comic Con.
What?
Yeah, it's called BurrowCon.
Of course it is.
It's early June, and they don't have a whole lot listed yet, but I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about it because one of our favorite guests is going to be there, and I'll save her name for later.
All right. I'm going to put 5 minutes on the clock.
Woo!
For myself. It's going to take me that long just to get through the list of names on this book I'm going to talk about. But we'll see how it goes. All right, 5 minutes. Go. All right, so I asked Joey the other week about Catwoman, about the Ed Brubaker and Darwin Cook run, and it was on sale for the Women in Comics thing, so I decided to pick it up. Catwoman Volume 1, Trail of the Catwoman, is a 331-page tome of a book. Okay. Written by Darwin Cook and Ed Brubaker. Art by Darwin Cook, Cameron Stewart, Mike Allred, Brad Rader, Rick Burchette. Colors by Matt Hollingsworth, Lee Lowridge, and Guya Brusco. I apologize if I
mangled
that. Letters by Sean Knott and Willie Schubert. Okay. Volume 1, My Ass. This beast is a book of 331 pages long, making it feel more like a tome than any volume I've ever read. Anyway, Selina Kyle, a.k.a. Catwoman, is back from the dead and looking for a new low-key way to live out the remainder of her 9 lives. Before long, the call of the catsuit proves too mighty for Selina, after DC's feline femme fatale discovers the ladies of the night are dying one by one, and the GCPD isn't doing a damn thing about it. After some top-notch snooping, Selina discovers that a hideous monster is stalking the streets of Gotham, and it's up to her to take out the trash. In addition to this, there's also the really gripping heist story at the start of the book, which finds Selina joining forces with her old flame and mentor, Stark. I love watching as Selina became reacquainted with her Catwoman persona. The series so far is very much a love letter to what makes the character so charming, compelling, and dangerous by all accounts. The Catwoman character also acts as a great way to strip Gotham of its glitz and glam to remind you that it's a very dark and dangerous place. I also want to mention that I really dug the support cast of this volume. Lots of characters take center stage throughout the run, which gives way to some really great narratives and gives you an alternative perspective on Selina's actions. Meow.
Yeah.
That's right.
We'll talk at the end. Go.
Next up, I have Gideon Falls, number 1, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Andrea Sorrentino, colors by Dave Stewart. The story opens with Norton, a man dressed in shabby clothing and a surgical mask who's digging through garbage while looking for a shard of metal. He finds the piece he's looking for, places it in his pocket, and brings it home. Upon his arrival, Norton labels the shard and places it in a glass jar. He then stores the glass jar along with all the others. Cue the Tom Waits song, What's He Building in There? After this intro, we meet Father Wilfred, a priest who's been sent to Gideon Falls after the town's pastor died suddenly in the night. As Father Wilfred begins to explore his new home, he comes to discover that not only are his living quarters haunted, but that a man named Norton may or may not be building a device that will awaken the devil itself. So this was a powerhouse number 1 for me. It reminded me immediately of Strange Attractors by Charles Soule, though it's still doing plenty on its own to make it unique. Sorrentino and Lemire are a creative team from above, and I felt it on every page. I'm also in love with the fact that the first words out of Father Wilfred's mouth were Jesus Christ, as he took the Lord's name in vain upon arriving in Gideon Falls. I thought that was pretty entertaining. The book is also, it's very scary, it's very mysterious, and it's off to one hell of a great start, so I highly recommend it. I also have X-Men Red, number 2, written by Tom Taylor, art by Mumad Asrar, colors by Ive Sorvina, Vorsina, there you go, letters by VC's Corey Pettit. After last month's shocking issue, I will not spoil it, we find the mutant Trinary, a high-level technopath desperately wanting to help Jean and her X-Men. There's just one thing. She's being held prisoner by some shady government so-and-so. Now, you know what that means. There's gonna be a jailbreak. I'm gonna skip the rest of the... skip the rest of the plot. And just say the following. I'm positively loving this book. It's only 2 issues in, and it's already one of my favorite X-Men-related titles I've ever read. I think Tom Taylor is doing some really fantastic character work. There's chemistry. There's just relationship gymnastics happening all over the place. I mean, I'm laughing, I'm frightened, and I'm feeling fired up by this book. Nice. There's a couple of political threads in here. Like, the mutant story right now is just really, really hitting home with so many things going on throughout the world, speaking to me. And also Honey Badger for President 2020.
Is she old enough?
She will be.
Okay, she will be 35.
I'll throw her through some kind of portal. We'll make it happen.
Okay. It's the X-Men, right?
It's comics. Time does not matter.
Exactly.
Okay, and super quick, I read through, I'm going on a young animal kick these last couple of weeks, wanting to catch up with everything for the new start of the imprint. So I read Shade the Changing Girls numbers 8 through 12 and Shade the Changing Woman number 1. Written by Cecil Castellucci, art by Marley Zarcone, inks by Andre Parks, and colors by Kelly Fitzpatrick. The second arc of the story takes Shade on a self-guided tour of Gotham, aka New York City, with our alien in the rainbow coat taking in everything from the Big Apple's finest street meat to the inspiring words of the Statue of Liberty herself.
Ooh.
Only as Shade walks the city, she continues to leak madness from her coat. Before long, Shade is using her powers to transform sections of the city into psychedelic utopias, granting far-fetched wishes to those who cross her path. Mix all of this together with Shade's search for an old movie star, and you've got a visually arresting story with so much weird that it would make Rod Serling's head spin. Wow. Why didn't I nominate Marley Zarcone when we were doing last year's awards?
There's still this year.
There is.
There's still this year, because it's breakthrough, you know?
I know. I dropped the ball.
We all do somewhere. There's always that, what if I had?
Mm-hmm.
I still remember the year where none of us nominated Saga, because we thought Stephanie would.
Yeah, I remember that.
Nobody did. It was, oops. Oops.
Tragic.
I gotta tell you that having read the Milk Wars,
mm-hmm.
I was enjoying Doom Patrol until the delays started to get crazy. But the book was a lot of fun. Everyone I picked up on your recommendation, the first couple of Cave Carsons.
Yeah,
and love those.
They're good, right?
Yeah, what I've read of Shade was interesting as well, and now I think the relaunch is Shade, what, the Eternal Woman or something? Is that what we're moving into?
Eternal Woman, Max Visaggio came out, and I've heard really good things about it. In some of the reviews that I've seen online so far, I haven't read it yet, but yeah, it's we're recording this on a Wednesday, so books have already come out. But yeah, so that's a new number one from her, and so Shade the Changing Woman has started, and Milk Wars was kind of the launching point for this like second wave of books. So like Mother Panic hasn't come back yet, Cave Carson hasn't come back yet, but it looks like they're doing one a week. So
that's great. That's a good way to do it. There's always something in the pipeline each week for people to grab a hold of.
Yeah, it was super cool because especially with the Eternity Girl coming out, like it wasn't really on my radar until I found out who was doing it and that it was part of the Young Animal imprint. And I was like, oh man, like I definitely got to check this out. And I looked at the pattern of what's been going on with the Milk Wars stuff. And yeah, they've really been delivering. Like they came back in a really big way, these past couple of weeks. And I mean, I'm into it. Like I'm so deep into this stuff right now. I think I'm pretty sure that I've read everything.
Wow.
With the exception of maybe, I might know, there's still some issues of Mother Panic that I haven't read. The second arc of Mother Panic is probably the last thing that I have left to read. And I still have some Doom Patrol issues left from the second arc as well.
Okay.
So I'm not done yet, but I'll get there.
Nice. I also want to chime in about Catwoman. It's great to hear that. Is it an omnibus volume or what are they calling this one?
It just said volume one. I bought it, and I mean, I got it for like $4, and
oh, that's amazing.
It was just, I opened it and I went to look at the page count and I was just like, what? But there's a lot in there. It's at least three books packed into one.
Well, it was good to hear that you were talking about the star character, because that means they pulled into play Selena's Big Score, that original graphic novel.
Yeah.
Which has some great moments. That scene, I'm sure you remember, where Selena's running down exactly how you can drop money off a bridge and get it back later. And it's, wow, Selena friggin' Kyle. She is a brilliant character as put down by Brubaker and Darwin Cook. And it, you know, the character has, we talked back when I talked about Tim Hanley's book, which everyone should pick up, The Many Lies of Catwoman, The Felonious History of a Feline Fatale, which is the complete history of Catwoman from the Golden Age right up to now, and goes down all these roads that you're going to want to start buying a whole bunch of other books. she's had such a checkered history that both reflects and plays against the mores of the time. That is why she's such a great character. Mm-hmm. But here, when you these books, the Brubaker Cook ones, really set her on a new path that, with a couple of missteps, you know, the hideous New 52 version, for instance.
Yeah, I mean, there's even a misstep or two in this run as well. There's some dialogue, some language, terminology that we don't really use anymore in mm-hmm. a comfortable setting that came from Catwoman's mouth at one point, and it was very early in my reading, and I was like, whoa!
Okay.
I hope this is not going to be a thing, and then thankfully it wasn't. But it's amazing how certain words just stick out to you now, and I just like, ooh, no, don't go there,
yeah.
No.
But she is resilient, intelligent, with agency, which so often she has not been. Mm-hmm. And under this run, it is I think both Ed Brubaker and Darwin Cook are not beholden but respectful for older styles.
Yeah.
And you've got that tough dame 40s film noir kind of look. I'm in charge here, guys. I got it. And it's nice to see Selina doing that even while bad things are going on. And there are lots of bad things going on.
Mm-hmm.
But so much great stuff. His art, you know, we're both huge Darwin Cook fans.
It was really fun to watch, like to read a book where she is falling in love with being the Catwoman all over again. You know, after supposedly killing, you know, Catwoman killed Selina Kyle. So now Selina Kyle is off the map and blah, blah, blah. But she can't resist the call of the suit. But it's done in such a way that it's about, like, duty and just a love for the adventure, mm-hmm. for, you know, and it's not even all about the, like, the big score stuff is about taking stuff, but it's for a good reason.
Yes.
You know, and then you have the following arc with the ladies that are going missing from the streets and they're disappearing, and she feels this obligation to step in because nobody else is doing anything and the GCPD is looking the other way or they're corrupt or whatever. And I love the idea of her kind of her soft spot is the little people in a lot of stories that I've read, you know, and she will protect whole city blocks if mm-hmm. she has to. And a lot of the stuff that was in this volume was about that. And the support cast was really cool, too. Like there were whole issues that were dedicated to these characters where Selina was just a background character.
Right, you're getting Slam Bradley and all the rest of it. Absolutely. Yeah, I love Slam.
Yeah, I would read like a Slam Bradley series. Like I would read the whole thing with him.
Well, he goes back to Action Comics number one.
I thought
literally
he was very cool.
From 1938. He's one of the original DC characters. So that they went back to that. It's such a great nod to the past and that period. Yeah. Now, how much did this volume run you for those who are looking?
Oh, I found it for like $4.
Okay, but for real, how much is it?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Probably like $24.99 maybe.
Still great. Still absolutely super, yeah.
Yeah, they've been having all these ridiculous sales. Marvel was having a sale the day before yesterday that they had a whole bunch of stuff, like over 100 items for 99 cents a piece.
What?
And it was whole volumes of things too.
Wow.
Like I caught up, I grabbed all the Daredevil volumes that we were missing. We were only missing like two, but like it cost me $2 as opposed to $30.
Wow.
So
this is was online and same with the DC.
This was on Comixology. This was on Kinja. This was on a whole bunch of different platforms. I think it was just Marvel overall. It could have even reached to the main website for all I know.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, like I need to cut myself off at a point because if you look hard enough, there's always something good going on. And I haven't been afraid to dig like back into things and read older stuff this year. Plus I'm reading a bunch of new stuff. Like I don't want to talk about it in depth until next week, but I read a book that came out, this Wednesday called Infidel Number One. I want
That looks very interesting.
I want Melissa to read it. I think it's up her alley. I loved it. I loved it. I thought it was great. And I really, it was really up there with Gideon Falls. I mean, I don't know how much I talked people into getting Gideon Falls, but Gideon Falls is really good. And it's super creepy. There's one page that just crept down my spine. And there's this, the same feeling that I had with Gideon Falls, I have with Infidel Number One. It's really, really good. I highly recommend it. The art is fantastic in both of those comics. Nice. But yeah, I've actually been keeping a running list of everything. I've been doing it this year. Other years, I say I'm going to do it, and I do it for a few weeks, and then I drop off. But we're like mid-March, and I'm still doing it, so we're in good shape.
Yeah.
So I've been writing down everything I've read, and I've been bolding things that I want to talk about at the end of the year.
See, that's good. I just restructured the living room because I still had our end-of-the-year books on the coffee table. I know that's hideous, but stuff happens, you know? So in putting them all back together, I got all the my little Nyx cards out. I put markers in the books where the year ends. And yeah, I'll probably this weekend be doing the same thing. Okay, what has come out so far this year? Let me go through the box. Let me start to look. Mm-hmm. Got to remember this one because it's very hard when we do 52 of these between one award show and the next. And what do I have to remember? Those early books? It's sometimes very hard to keep those in mind. Oh, but that was so great. It's one of those things where when someone's looking for a wedding dress or a perfect suit for an event, will they buy the first one they see? No, they dismiss it a little bit. It can't be the first thing I saw. Well, sometimes the best book of the year comes out in January.
Mm-hmm.
And we tend to, you know, it recedes. Until you, but if you remember, like you say, you write it down, you highlight it, you come back to it and reread it, and it probably has double the impact.
Yeah.
Seeing it again.
Yeah, I think there's, like I said, I think there's going to be a couple of changes to the show this year because we're having like a saturation of things. Like there's even more miniseries this year than there was last year, and we ran into the thing where we had to nominate a whole bunch.
Yeah.
So I mean, even in terms of like film and stuff like that, you know, there's all kinds of things coming to Netflix by the end of this year. Jessica Jones, we just finished watching the second season of that last night. So there's that, and there's all the movies coming out. It's just out of control. We might have to divide it up into two categories, like best television, best film.
We could do that. That makes a lot of sense because, you know, best film's already decided, so we don't have to worry about that.
Oh, yeah, what's that?
Black Panther.
We'll see. We'll see.
I know, it's going to be tough for anything to beat that, but we'll see.
I have watched a movie recently. I'm not allowed to say what it is, but I will tell you that it was phenomenal.
I believe it opens next week, doesn't it? On the 23rd?
I can't say.
Okay.
But I will move on. Let's move on.
Yes, let's move on.
Okay. What do we got here? What's next? You wanna let's see. We both did our lightning rounds. That's all taken care of. Oh, let's talk about. Should we talk about either of these? I'm just thinking. What about Joey?
I think Joey wants to talk about one book particularly.
Okay. Why don't we
one book with a writer with the initials KT.
Let's go to our news things.
Okay, we'll leave both of them to the side for next time around.
Yeah,
okay,
because I'm not. I don't feel like leaving everybody out.
Okay. We have so much news.
We do. We do.
We've got news.
Yes.
News.
We've established. Okay, so this is what we have. I hope this video doesn't play at the top of the thing. If it does, I'm gonna have to stop it. I apologize. Don't do this to me. Everything. Okay, it's not moving. It's not doing anything. It's not a video. Thank God. Okay. Yeah. Click to unmute. No, it is a video. Stop. All right. We're good.
Stop.
Behind the scenes. Joshua Williamson and Bob.
Stepan Sheish.
Are working together. Oh, wait.
Go.
Do you want to do it together?
No, go.
They're working together on a DC comic. They're not saying what it is yet, but they're joining forces.
the designs that Stepan has shown on his Twitter feed are pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It's we don't know anything at this point. It could be Elseworldy Young Justice.
That's what people are saying.
Yeah, it could be a Super Sons expanded universe, but again, Stepan's artwork is such that just looking at it, you can start to put a story to it.
Yeah.
And adding Joshua Williamson, who's so great on his own, to that art, I'm thinking this is going to be something real special.
Yeah, I mean, Williamson's doing Flash. He did Nailbiter. He's still working on Birthright, which is getting picked up, and I think it's going to be a television show. I haven't read Captain Midnight, but he does that as well. I have not read that one. And you know Stepan from this podcast, podcast we've ever done. Good friend of the show and a fine, fine artist and gentleman scholar.
Yeah, and gamer.
Did
you ever get to play with them?
No.
Oh, come on.
He plays Diablo on PC. Bronwyn and I play it on PS4 a lot.
Oh, okay.
So I'm all over the map, Bob. I have like at least 7 games that I'm actively playing right now. I'm a mess. All right.
The only thing they are saying about this project is, when asked directly, it is not part of something we'll talk about next week in depth, the DC Black Label announcement.
Oh, so they say that it's not a part of that.
It's not a Black Label announcement. Where that could change to. But that's a whole thing for next week, so stay tuned.
Whole other kettle of fish.
Yeah. If you know Johnny Walker Black Label, you know Black Label is something special.
All right. Oh, this website's going to be a thing too, eh? All right.
Yeah, it's got pictures and stuff on it.
Yeah. Next on the list, Gail Simone and Adriana Mello are going to launch a Plastic Man miniseries, a 6-part Plastic Man miniseries.
Awesome.
With DC Comics. So, Birds of Prey, Gail Simone collaborator, Adriana Mello, for a 6-issue Plastic Man miniseries. There's a whole bunch of really cool quotes by Gail in this CBR article. Bob, do you want to read some of them?
Sure. Gail told Sci-Fi Wire and reprinted by CBR, "When I think about Plastic Man, he was generally the first funny superhero. I'm obviously attracted to that. There's also the great mixture of tragedy in there, too, that I love. The humor comes from a place of pain, and a lot of people I know, the bravest ones, deal with their pain through humor. So I really like trying to find that balance of keeping that roller coaster going, where there's enough tragedy going on that the humor kind of helps you get through it, and that's what this series is." Plastic Man, going way back, which it sounds like Gail is really looking to do, back in the 40s, where it was a quality comics book by a very inventive fellow named Jack Cole. He had Eel O'Brien is Plastic Man, who's sort of like in a jokery kind of thing, falls into a vat of chemicals and turns out as Plastic Man with his sidekick Woozy Winks. They did all kinds of crazy adventures as Plaz would fall back to the Eel O'Brien thing and try to fight crime from the inside and the outside. And because of his abilities, humor was everywhere. Captain Marvel was funny, meaning Shazam, but not in the way that Plastic Man was. And I think Gail is absolutely perfect for this. She did a great job, if you remember Secret Six run, with the Elongated Man, and balancing his humor and the tragedy that was in his life with Sue, his wife, and so on. I'm loving this idea. What do you think, Steve?
I'm thinking the recording is not loving your microphone right now.
Okay.
It's fine. Everybody, we apologize. The situation we have going on here is very, very low grade right now without all of our proper equipment and people to run the show. You're cutting out and going Robotronic just a little bit there, okay. Bob. I understood you, and I think other people will be able to as well. I just hope they don't turn off the podcast.
we'll have to figure that out.
As for me, I am really, really, really excited about this. I don't know why. Before this was announced, Plastic Man has been on my mind lately. I think it was Isn't he a part of the Terrifics?
Yes. The,
okay, so he is. So I saw that, and I can't help but think of Plastic Man from back in my childhood and the Cartoon Express on USA. And they had the Hanna-Barbera stuff. And then every now and again, in between that block, I don't know if I had to change the channel or if they hosted it or what, but Plastic Man was part of a supergroup in a cartoon. Maybe you know what I'm talking about, Bob?
No, that's past my cartoon watching days.
All right. Well, he was in an animated show and it was awesome. And I loved watching it. I need to find out what it was called.
Yeah.
But, super, super good. And I don't know. Maybe I'm having like Mr. Fantastic withdrawals. I need somebody to be stretchy besides Ms. Marvel. And, I don't know, maybe Plastic Man. And I really just, I like the quotes of Gail Simone. I like what she's talking about when she's bringing this character back into the spotlight and why, like what she loves about him. It sounds very compelling and it sounds like something that she'll be able to write a really great story around. And I'm excited to read it for sure. So, all right, we've got a little bit of sad, kind of sad news about Squirrel Girl.
Yeah.
Not canceled, but.
It's good news and bad news. Do you want the good news or the bad news?
You know what?
Go ahead.
Let me, just in case you decide to go robot again, let me...
Should we start again?
No.
Should we hang up and no?
No.
Okay.
I'm not doing it. You know what? They're not even letting me see it. So go ahead, Bob. You go ahead.
Okay. Erica Henderson announced on her Twitter and her decision, but she will be leaving the interior art duties on Squirrel Girl. We don't know exactly when, but fairly soon down the road. She's going to be doing creator-owned work, but she will continue to do the covers on Squirrel Girl. Now, her inventiveness, her amazing ability to be crazy, loopy, insane with Koi Boy and Chipmunk Hunk and Tippy Toe and all the rest of it, and still have so many positive messages with Ryan North, the writer, certainly. Particularly body image, where you see Squirrel Girl in other venue around, and she's not built the way she is, the way Erica draws her. I'm gutted by this. I'm thrilled for Ms. Henderson, and will follow wherever she goes and will buy whatever she does. I don't know that she can be easily replaced on this series. So I am concerned moving forward, even that there's a TV show in the works and whatever. She has a special mixture going on in that series. So I don't know. I have one oddball off the fringe idea for someone to follow, but you talk to me first, Steve. What do you think about this story?
Well, I mean, it's upsetting. It's a little, you get used to something, right? Like you get used to certain creators being on certain books and a book looking the way that it does. And you fall in love with that book looking that way. And then it stays that way to the point where you get real snug with the way that that book is. And then all of a sudden they announce that they're going to pull the rug out from under your feet. And they're going to stick some other artist in there. And the questions start rolling around in your head. Like, are they going to do their own thing? Are they going to try and match, you know, Henderson's style? Is it going to be an homage? Is it going to be, like, is it going to be up to snuff? And so, you know, all the fabric of reality starts to break down.
Yep.
But here's the thing, though. She's leaving on her own accord. She's very, very upfront about that. And sometimes you just, it's like Kelly Sue. Like Kelly Sue wanted to go and try her hand at making television and creating shows and doing other things and, you know, she's off doing that, and we're going to, you know, reap the rewards of that within the coming months or years or whatever it's been. I hope. I haven't seen anything yet, but I'd like to. I don't know. Whenever anybody that you love, you know, I used to not really notice this kind of thing when we started the podcast, where I wasn't really in tune with artists. Like, I was talking to Bronwyn about this, is getting sidebar, but it's related, I promise. I was telling her the other day how I was reading, something, and all of a sudden the artwork changed from whoever I was looking at to, oh my God, what is her name? Oh, I'm blanking right now. This is killing me.
What book was it?
Oh, I can't remember anything. Stephanie Hans. It was Stephanie Hans. Okay. So all of a sudden it just changes over into her artwork, and I was like, oh, wait a minute. And I looked at the credits. I'm like, yeah, that's Stephanie Hans. Like, it's got to be. And I looked up at Brahman and I said, you know, it's amazing. When we started this podcast, I used to think to myself, how the hell do people pick out artists just on site? Like, just by seeing them, that you can pick up that something within the page has changed and you know it's somebody different. And then there's the next evolutionary step of, not only did you notice that it was something different, but you can also, you know who it is. And not all the way, but I've gotten pretty good with picking out like artists that I know, and even some of the ones that I don't. And I think it's fun to kind of move from one like perspective of art to the other. So in terms of Erica Henderson leaving, I hope that they find somebody for that. You know who would be amazing for that book?
Go ahead.
Brittany Williams.
Yeah, she would be my reasonable choice that I think could happen.
Mm-hmm. Is there anybody else?
It could work. I believe that Kristen Gudsnuck of Hinch Girl could do a great Squirrel Girl.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that would be cool. I would totally read that. Oh, by the way, I picked up all of Squirrel Girl the other day.
Nice.
Yep.
Be ready for the end of the year. Even with Erica leaving, there's going to be lots of Squirrel Girl talk as we move forward.
All right.
But I say Kristen, because anyone who could create the Beta Carrot team has got the Squirrel Girl vibe.
I agree. All right. You have anything else to say about the Squirrel Girl?
No, except squish, 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 I'm crying.
Okay, so we put out a poll last night when we knew that we weren't going to be able to
really a poll. The show.
Yes, I asked everybody, what do you think this week's comic book podcast will be delayed? Why do you think this week's podcast will be delayed until Thursday? Your choices were Comic Book Avalanche, Windows 10 update, Alien Abduction, and We Are Batman. So,
who was the winner?
In a tie, it was a tie in the end for 47 votes between the Windows 10 update and Alien Abduction. So
they could be related.
Yes. And then 17% for We Are Batman and 15% for Comic Book Avalanche. So
any write-in votes?
No, I didn't give the option for that.
Well,
they could have commented and said something. Somebody said snow.
I would go with that.
But it was a Windows 10 update. I started the update about 3.5 hours before the show, and it just kept going and going and going, and it just got to the point where it was too late to record a show. Joey will be back next week, and we'll have these sound issues worked out. I feel like we're making this apology all the time. I gotta sit down with somebody who can teach me a couple of things hands-on so we don't have to worry about this crap. I also need to get a new laptop. Mine died. So, like I said, we're working with, you know, not our stuff.
Stone knives and bearskins, yeah.
Right. Okay, so we have a question.
Ooh. We have a couple, but we're doing one, so now it's a surprise.
Yes, and I'm gonna throw this one to Bob. Because I admittedly don't have an answer for this.
Oh, we are going for that one. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we're definitely going with that one.
Okay, shoot.
Okay. Scott Tastrophe wants to know, With the popularity of the mashup Carnage and Osborn, what other hero or villain, including equipment usage, mashups come to mind that you thought were cool or just plain stupid? For the most iconic is Superman. Oh, for me, the most iconic is Superman holding Cap's shield and Mjolnir. So, Bob, what are your favorite mashups?
Well, I agree with Scott on that one. That's from JLS 4 with the cross company thing there. Am I disappearing on you?
You did for a second, but I don't even care anymore. Go ahead.
Okay. I give up. And to defeat the final big bad, Superman has the hammer in one hand and the shield in the other, and it's pretty amazing. And Wonder Woman did the same thing in Marvel versus DC number 3, and that she could hold the hammer as well. Cap did that too back in Thor 390. Of late, that sort of equipment usage that I love is from Squirrel Girl numbers 2 and 3, where Doreen and Tippy Toe are dressed in Iron Man armor. Mm-hmm. Come on, a squirrel dressed in a giant Iron Man head and a little armor, and they fly off to the moon to defeat Galactus. Come on, that's good stuff. But now, I don't know if anyone's going to remember, because it's just me being old, but we're going to put a link up on the site to a piece I wrote about this. Back in 1996, there was a Marvel versus DC crossover event, and between issues 3 and 4, the two comic universes combined, and for one and only one new comic book day, which was actually a leap year day, 1996, there were neither DC nor Marvel books on the stand, only 12 amalgam comics. With the things mashed together. So you had books like Amazon, which was Storm with the Power of Wonder Woman, as written and drawn by John Byrne, Doctor Strange Fate, The X-Patrol, Super Soldier, and Bruce Wayne, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. These are sensational, fun books if you're a comic book fan. Great creators on board, Ron Mars, Peter David, tons and tons of people. They even came back a year later and entered a dozen more in the middle of another crossover miniseries. It was called All Access. And that included Iron Lantern, Thorion of the New Asgods, Generation X, and Lobo the Duck.
Interesting.
These were collected in 4 trades with the sort of Cold War between the two companies. I think they're out of print, but they're around. And these books can be found in the dollar bin. But you want to talk about mashup, Scott? Amalgam. Make mine amalgam. And by the way, according to the people who know such things and spend way too much time thinking about it, the Amalgam Earth is Marvel Earth number 9602.
Oh.
In case you were keeping score at home. And if you are, just be careful, will you?
All right, Bob. Thank you.
I'm not saying anymore.
Very much. Great answer. Okay, we have a couple of site plugs that you'd like to announce. Yes. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. We've got, we're going to talk a little bit also about stuff we're looking forward to, but new on the site, we've got Extremity number 12 reviewed by T. Jaxi, John Burkle doing the new Jeff Lemire Doctor Star and the Kingdom of the Lost Tomorrows. Ooh. And Mike Antonucci has another in his comic mystery column, this one regarding Golden Age collecting and where that's all headed. So his two columns have been a lot of fun, so we should you should check those out, as well as everything else new to the site, including all those podcasts that Steve will talk about later.
All right. Let's talk about what we are looking forward to this week, and then we'll dim the lights a little bit.
Yeah.
All right.
Light week for me. How about you?
No.
Okay.
Not entirely. It's not so bad. It happened where I'm like, oh, I only have 6 books, and then it did not turn out to be the case. Sometimes I just miss things and I'm looking at the list. So what did you pick up today, Bob?
Birds of Prey, Batgirl and the Birds of Prey number 20, that's coming to an end also. Squirrel Girl number 30, which is the last of the Squirrel Girl in Space arc with the fake Silver Surfer, which is just he's sort of the Point Blank Silver Surfer, just sort of covered in silver paint, harassing people for money. And Marvel 2-in-1 number 4 by the aforementioned Chip Zdarsky.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's looking good. I am probably going to be checking out the Wayward Sisters Anthology.
Oh.
From Toronto Comics, which has a story by our good friend Ms. Stephanie Cook.
I just put down on the Kickstarter for...
You did? Oh, awesome.
Yeah, her... Oh my God, what the hell is it called? The other Toronto.
Osgood as Gold? Yes.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, she's the official editor-in-chief of that one.
Yeah, I threw down for that. So shout out to them. Hope that comes to print. That would be amazing. I want to read it. As for what I picked up today, All New Wolverine number 32. Ooh. Speaking of All New Wolverine, Laura Kinney is dropping the Wolverine moniker in July.
Whoa.
And Mariko Tamaki is taking over the character for a new, brand new number one, fresh start, X-23.
There you go.
And of course, Laura and Gabby are on the team for X-Men Red. So Tom Taylor will still be writing those characters in book. So... I also picked up Betrothed by our friend Sean Lewis of Coyotes fame. Ooh. He wrote this one as well. This is from Aftershock, new number one. I grabbed that. Curse Words number 12, Doctor Strange number 387, Eternity Girl, Young Animal, yep. Mags Visaggio, and Sunny Liu. Wow, this looks amazing. I'm thumbing through it right now. okay, stop. Giants. Number 4, Dark Horse Comics. I mentioned this back when it first came out, number 1. I just want to put it out there. This is still really, really, really good. So if you're looking for giant kaiju and like underground gang wars and stuff like that, like brought to you from a really unique perspective of two young children trying to make it in different parts of the world that were once friends and brothers, it's really good. That's Giants from Dark Horse. I picked up Long Lost, number 3. We talked about that with Melissa a little while ago. We may or may not be trying to arrange to have the creators on our show sometime soon. Speaking of creators, before I forget, we are going to have Monsieur Jonas Goonface on the show later this month. I believe it's the 27th that he's going to be joining us. So the show will be up the 28th, that Wednesday. So if you have any questions for Jonas, he was the artist on God Shaper. And he has a new webcomic that he's been working on as well. I'm not on my computer, so I don't have it in front of me, but maybe I can look it up. But yeah, we're going to be chilling out with him. A super cool dude. I send him the most ridiculous DMs over Twitter and he just laughs it off. So we will be in good company. We got a couple of really cool interviews coming up in the next couple weeks. So moving down the list, Marvel 2-in-1 number 4, Mr. Miracle came back this week with Mr. Miracle number 7. Matt Rosenberg and David Gorham came out with New Mutants Dead Souls number 1 this week. I've already read it. It was good. It didn't blow me away or anything, but I haven't read some of these characters before. Like, I'm already familiar with Ilyana and Magic and stuff like that, but I don't really know Wolfsbane that well. I know Boom Boom. So there's a couple of people on this team that I'm interested in getting to know. And the premise for it is really neat as well. Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man, number 301. Supergirl, number 19, that has absolutely just the art in this book blew my mind. I've been away from Supergirl for quite some time, and I saw a preview page for this, and I went right back to that sale that DC had going on with all the all nice. The comics being so low, and I picked up the rest that I was missing. But oh, here you go. This is really poetic. It's Jamal Campbell.
Wow, there you go.
Jamal Campbell. Yeah, the artwork in this is absolutely stunning, and it looks like it's a new story that people can jump onto. I didn't even know it was him. All right. That's cool. And I picked up Unbeatable Squirrel Girl number 30 as well.
Nice. Awesome cover on that one, by the way.
Yeah. And I want to... I'll get it eventually. There's no rush. I got the Prince of the Dressmaker upstairs came in the mail today. And the Earth One Green Lantern hardcover.
Oh,
came out, and that's from the creators that did oh my god, this book that I talked about like 2 years ago. I went to Maine to the doctor's appointment, Invisible something. I'm the worst. I can't remember. Yeah. I'd have to look it up. Apologies. But yeah, that looks really cool too. And yeah, so that was my pull list.
That's a good one. And you started with $6?
Yeah.
Nicely done.
That's how it happens, Bob. I have a problem.
Yeah. Well, I have nothing this week, but boy, the week after is ridiculous.
Yeah, well, I'm probably go upstairs and check that out too.
Yeah, the 21st is crazy. It's like, oh boy. Okay, look, every month is the same, but sometimes because things get pushed or pulled back a little bit, all of a sudden it's, wait a minute, I didn't budget for that.
Right.
I did not budget for that. But eh. I used to remember seeing you pick up those piles at Tours years ago.
Oh, I don't do that anymore. No. And you have to remember, you know, I was not getting the prices that Rob was giving.
Right. And we also didn't have some of the extra options we have now with Comixology and even a review copy here and there. It was buy them or don't read them.
Right. Yeah.
And there were days, I literally couldn't see Steve behind the pile of books he was buying.
That is entirely true.
Yes, it is.
It really is true. I was going through a really rough time. That was right after my breakup and everything like that. And I had, you know, money to blow that I shouldn't have. And those were dark times.
You handled it like a champ.
Yeah, dark times with an enabling friend who worked at the local comic shop and was more than happy to invite you to his house where he had a comic shop in his basement and would charge you like 50 cents an issue of anything you could find. So, yeah.
It was amazing down there.
Those were the brightest of dark days.
Absolutely.
Those are good times. I miss Rob. All right.
Hi, Rob, if you're listening.
Yeah. Before we get out of here...
Yeah.
For this week, we would like to raise a glass and pay a special tribute. I'm going to let Bob talk us through this one. We lost a good friend in comics and in life. And Bob, if you would, please.
Sure. Pardon me, folks. The comic collecting community lost one of its absolute titans over the weekend. As my friend of over 35 years, John Verzel, passed away suddenly at age 57. He was the driving force behind Comic Heaven, first as a retail store in California, which would eventually transmogrify into one of the biggest auctions in the industry. His ads alone once filled over a dozen pages in each year's Overstreet price guide, and the actual auction list itself was a phone book of wonderful books from every era imaginable. He was, over the last few years, a fixture at all the major conventions, with his displays a highlight at San Diego since their beginnings, and he's been doing Chicago and New York and Philadelphia. John had also amassed one of the finest Golden Age collections, particularly Timey, in the world. I say that with no fear of being contradicted, and that was both personally and as a retail stock. That said, he treated even the dollar box collector with the same respect as the highest of high rollers who show up at his table. If you visited his booth, he was never at a loss for a great story about a book or a character or the fabulous tale of a creator who had just stopped by for a visit just before you left. I could fill an episode. I could fill more than an episode with stories about John, his brother Frank, who owns Long Island Comics, and myself ferrying the rarest of rare books to collectors' vaults or researchers' offices. The Ernst Gerber photo journal guides are filled with John's books. Watching the two of them prep for the auction with just books that you can, the legendary books you've heard about, I got to hold in my hand while we were doing these things with, it's 3 or 4 in the morning with pizza and stuff going on, and there are all these books. And to keep it simple, I'll tell you a quick story that I've told somewhere down the years here that really shows his fervor for wanting to do things right. He was an advisor to Bob Overstreet's Price Guide for years and years, and it's the CGC, but also his sense of humor. Years and years back, this is more than 25 years ago, when the whole Wizard thing and their Price Guide was starting up, they had a convention at the Nassau Coliseum, the big sports arena out here. And John and Frank and I went to this show, and he had some books, he had some deals going on. And they had this thing where, I don't know if it was CGC or the companies that preceded them, but someone was doing, maybe it was just Wizard, certificates of authenticity for the books you got signed. Well, the guy who was doing it was sitting, well, two of them were sitting at the front door at card tables and just filling out certificates. So we wandered through the room, and no one was watching anyone sign anything. So we got to the front door, and John, who had this mischievous twinkle in his eye always, had with him, in a trade he just made, the original Daredevil number 7, which is Stan Lee with wonderful artwork by the amazing Wally Wood, who from EC fame and so many other things after that. And so as we get to the front of this, the guy asks John, who's holding this book, what did you have signed? I had this Daredevil number 7 signed by Wally Wood. Oh, okay. And the guy fills out a form signed by Wally Wood, witnessed by Joe Smith or whatever. Here you go. Well, the fact that Wally Wood had passed away about 30 years before didn't enter into the fact that we now had a certificate of authenticity that said he signed this book. It's you got to do things the right way. And that was just what John was about. I'm trying to stay upbeat here. It is really tough. John leaves behind an amazing legacy as a dealer, collector, friend, most importantly, a father, and his passion and love for all things comic related will be nigh unto impossible to replace in this hobby. Our condolences go out to John's family, daughter Rose, son John, his wife Nan, his brother Frank, and his longtime assistant Yoli. The thoughts of everyone in the comics community are with you today.
Very well said, Bob. Very lovely.
Thank you.
All right. Safe journey, John. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Talking Comics podcast. We should be back to our regular cast schedule and recording situation by next week. Should all go well. As always, you can send us your comments or questions through our email, podcast@talkingcomicbooks.com. We are also on Twitter @TalkingComics. Don't forget to check out TalkingComicBooks.com for news, reviews, and articles about comics, video games, TV shows, and much more. We also have podcasts of every flavor, including Talking Games, Movies, Valiant, Adventure, Bendis Assembled, and other stuff.
We still can't talk about some of those. Continued.
They're working on it. All right. So I guess I'm skipping all of this other stuff for Bob.
Good night, everyone. Make sure you reach out and talk to a friend tonight.
All right. If they want to talk to you tonight, where can they find you?
Bob Ryer at TalkingComicBooks.com.
All right. And I am @Dead_Anchorus on both Twitter and Instagram. Bob, give me a farewell.
Wow, you hit me, Steve. Sorry. That's okay. Have you know
Just say it.
Okay. You know, I'm someone who's old. Let's be honest. I have lived more life than I'm going to. And it is when you lose somebody that those things start to come into play. And it doesn't matter how old you are at that point. There are these times where, you'll say to yourself, I should have done this, or I should have been nicer, or I should have made sure that person was okay, or that, you know, I haven't spoken to them in a while. I should throw a call out there. I should, you know, send an email or send a message. Because you don't know. You don't know what someone else is going through, and that little gesture could change a life. So there you go.
Very well said.
Yeah.
Very well said. Yeah. You know, if you think about it, do it.
Yeah.
You know, people disappear. Things, I don't know. All right.
Yeah. We're going down a dark place here. Yeah. But that's okay. No, it's a positive place.
It is a positive place. Listen, I'm not going to lie. Like, I think about this stuff a lot. Like, I miss a lot of my people. You know, I haven't seen Bob in a really long time. I'm going to be here for a year come the 23rd of this. Yeah, it's already been a year. You know, we're coming up on my year anniversary of hosting the show. And I mean, we've got a lot more to go. It's just time. Time goes by really fast. Weekends go by too fast. Weeks are a pain in the ass because you're always working. You always feel like you're living for something else, and it sucks. And, you know, if you don't take time to reach out to the people that you love or tell the people that you're thinking about them, you never know what could happen. And it's a good idea to keep in touch and to make the effort, you know? Just a little hello, I think, goes a long way.
Absolutely.
And so that's my advice to all of you lovely, lovely people out there. Again, we thank you for sticking with us this week. I know that the podcast isn't going to sound that great. There's not a whole hell of a lot I can do about it. So thank you very, very much for your patience. And we will be back next week with a better situation, and we're really looking forward to it. So, as always, I have been Steve Say. And we want you to be excellent to each other. Share a comic book. Buy somebody a comic book. Go to your shop and pick up something that you've already bought digitally. Pick it up again to have the nice hard copy of it. And until next time on the Talking Comics podcast, to be continued.